Insurance is one of those necessities in life, and there are all types of insurance: health insurance, dental insurance, car insurance, life insurance, disability insurance, and so on. So one of the challenges for each and every one of us is figuring out what type of insurance we need.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
We are talking to insurance advisor Daryl Perry II. According to Daryl, insurance can be complicated, but it doesn't have to be difficult. Daryl has spent the last 8 years helping to educate individuals and small business owners about insurance. And Daryl is also quite active on LinkedIn. He's the guy with the bow tie. Daryl is also the motivation behind Professionally Black. And I have been fortunate enough to participate in this effort, and that effort is also on LinkedIn. Daryl's journey on LinkedIn has been a fun one, with going from obscurity to garnering over a minimum of 100,000 views of his content each quarter. But most importantly, Daryl has been creating meaningful relationships and in a business in a relatable way. And I'm so happy to be a part of Daryl's network. Hi, Daryl. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone.
Thanks for having me, Queen.
I'm so happy to have you today. And we've got this great topic talking about insurance for employees. But before we get to that topic, my audience always likes to know a little bit about the people they're listening to. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your personal and professional trajectory and how you got into insurance?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a military brat. I was born in Nuremberg, Germany. I don't speak German, but I'm pretty fluent in Spanish. So that's kind of a longer story, but I've been all over different places, and I lived in Las Vegas for about 11 years before moving to Georgia. And then when I moved to Georgia, we have four kids, and I basically said, you know, my degree in mathematics and accounting wouldn't get me the pay I wanted because I already had some experience under my belt. So I had to go entry level to use my degree. Insurance found me by CareerBuilder. Aflac was the first venture. I didn't know what Aflac did, knew the company, but didn't know a thing about what insurance really did for that because I was a military brat. I always had, you know, government insurance for most of my life up to that point. And then when Aflac found me, I said, okay, I'll try this until I find a W-2 job because it was a, you know, entrepreneurial thing. Mm-hmm. And eight years later, I'm still waiting for that W-2 because I've been having fun working with insurance and helping people. And I lead a team of agents. Was fortunate enough to be the number two account opener in Aflac in 2014 in the whole company. So from that point, decided to teach people how to do this. And now we service all different sizes of small businesses as well as individuals with helping their benefit choices.
Wow. Aflac is one of those great companies in Georgia. And so yeah. You're working for the home team. I know, I believe Aflac was the first company. I might be wrong. You could tell me if I'm correct or not. If you know, the first company to give $1 million to the National Museum on African-American History and Culture.
Ooh, I don't know that one. Yes, that might be true.
Yes,
we do a lot
yes.
of diversity. I know the coolest thing with Aflac is that the president's a Black woman. Obviously, the owners, the Amos brothers, are white males. They trusted Teresa to be the president of the U.S. operations. So it's cool seeing a Black female run a large company like that.
Wow. Wow. So they're really paving the way for diversity, equity, and inclusion in all levels of what they do, not only what they do internally, but what they do externally. When you look at that big donation to the museum, and that is so important when you look at corporate social responsibility.
That's why I still work with them. They're part of my offering. I offer several different products, but that's what they're a big part of it, because one, what they do for people, and what they do for the policyholders. So I always kind of stood behind that.
That's great. That's great. So it's good to see you are connected with that company. They're based out of
Columbus,
Georgia. Yes. Where the congressman there and Calvin Smyre, Representative Calvin Smyre, is from Columbus. And in just a moment, I don't know why my mind went blank, but one of the five African-American representatives of Georgia, Congressman, he's out of Columbus as well. So we have good things happening out of Columbus.
Yeah, and it's a military town, so that's why I like that too. The only thing there is really Aflac and a military base, so it's perfect for my background.
Great, great. So talk to us about employee insurance. That was your what you chose to talk about today. And you know, as when I know when I first started working, my first job out of graduate school was at Morehouse College, the great mm-hmm. historically Black college and university here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And when they gave me that employee benefit, well, I was like, well, nobody told me all the things I should consider. So, you know, education is so important and you're out there educating people on insurance. So can you tell us what we should consider when we're looking at employee insurance?
Well, yeah, the first thing is that your experience isn't unique. It's very common, actually, where they just say, hey, it's time for open enrollment. Here's a 30-page booklet with a whole bunch of stuff in it. Figure it out. And insurance is written in kind of a language that the average person doesn't speak. I'm a big Wu-Tang head, and I'm watching the Wu-Tang show American Saga, and there's a part where the RZA's brother says, hey, the law is written in legalese so that the average person can't understand it. So when you read a contract, it's not written for the high school diploma to understand it. It's just saying, hey, here's the contract, figure it out. And insurance is almost that way, but not really purposefully. It's just language we don't usually hear. So the biggest mistake I see is time to understanding it. Most people spend about 18 minutes or so making benefits decisions. So you'll watch a TV show for an hour and that's gone, but you only spend about 18 minutes looking at your open enrollment and figuring it out. And that affects your every single day. Your entire year is predicated on what you make decisions for that 18 minutes or even less for some people. Because I'll have people I'll talk to say, hey, just tell me what to get. And yes, I can do that, but I don't know your situation. So the biggest mistake is just lack of knowledge. An interesting study in economist, I think he has about 500 people to explain four insurance terms: premium, deductible, copay, and coinsurance. 14% of people knew how to explain those four terms. The other 86% did not. So that's on the high end. Some studies show 4% of people can explain those terms. So our range of knowledge, when you mention education is important, is 4 to 14% of people can effectively explain those four basic words. And that to me is crazy, because bankruptcy is so big in the US because of medical issues. But that's the reason why, because you don't know what your copay is. Oh, my battery died. You know what your copay is, your deductible, and those things. So you got to understand those to actually make an effective decision. So that's the first mistake.
So going to something you stated previously about insurance and all these laws being written in legalese so the average person can't understand it. Do you have an understanding or a reason why we write in such a way where the average person can't understand the policies that they're supposed to be choosing? Is there a reason why?
A lot of it's compliance. The insurance companies have to follow the law too. So they have to make sure they say everything on the up and up, so that way legally when they go to court, there's no issue. But then the problem is the words of insurance are spoken by insurance people. So when I talk to my colleagues, I can throw these words around, no problem. But when I talk to a person not in insurance, like my wife, she's like, I don't know what that means. And I think about when I first got my insurance license, my wife would usually bring me the benefits package and say, hey, it's open enrollment. Go to this website and tell me what to get or whatever, because I was quote unquote smart. But I didn't know insurance stuff. So I literally would go on the website and say, okay, neither one of us has cancer, we don't need cancer insurance. Where I didn't realize cancer insurance meant if you get cancer, you will get paid X amount of dollars. I was like, oh, I found that out later. Mm-hmm. So it's written in I'm just quickly looking, what's the price? And is it a word that matters to me? And since it was a word that didn't matter to me, I just moved on. And that's how most people operate. They say, what's the cheapest option? What's the network? What's it cost me to see a doctor? Other than that, people never know out-of-pocket max, or they never really know what its coinsurance means. They just see it. So insurance companies got to protect themselves, but the consumer just needs someone to explain it in layman's terms, because all the words can be made simple. It's just legally they got to put it in the brochures a certain way because of compliance. They have a bunch of people watching their stuff. You got the Department of Insurance, you got law firms watching it, you got taxes sometimes pulled into it. So with all that said, the insurance company does have to kind of protect themselves. But at the unfortunate dismay to the employee, they just get a booklet with 30 pages. And they're like, I'm a foreman for a construction company. I know construction. I have no idea what this means. So my job and my team's job is to help make it easy, because benefits can be complicated, but it doesn't have to be difficult.
Well, let's make it easy. Let's talk about the first four terms that you discussed that the average person doesn't know. Can you define those terms for our audience?
Yeah. So first one, deductible. Now, a lot of us have heard that from our car insurance. That's the main way people hear deductible. And unfortunately, it's when something bad happens. They'll get into a car wreck, or they'll say, oh, I'm going to do one of those safe light repair my window thing, or repair my windshield. And then they're like, oh, your deductible is 1,000. The windshield costs, you know, 500 bucks. So deductible means you have to meet this threshold before coinsurance kicks in. So that's for any insurance. Deductible just means when I hit this number, then coinsurance kicks in. So I like to let people know, up until your deductible, you're on your own pretty much, because the way it works is that if you got to think, can I pay my deductible and mortgage at the same time? That's what I often have to tell people. Like, if you look at health insurance and the deductible is $7,000, that's fine if you're healthy and everything. But could you, if you had to, pay your deductible and your mortgage at the same time? And if people say no, I'm like, okay, we got to look at some options in a scenario. If that happened, how would you deal with it? So that's the first one, is that's the number you have to meet before coinsurance kicks in from any kind of coverage. It could be car insurance, phone, house, whatever. So number two, copay. That one should be easy as well. That's the one a lot of people knew. Copay is basically the money you pay for a visit. But the thing people have to realize, that's for the visit. That doesn't cover everything. Sometimes you'll see a doctor and you pay the copay, then you need a bill later on for blood work or something, or for an x-ray. And you're like, I thought I paid the copay. Well, yeah, that got the doctor to talk to you and kind of render his information. But far as the other services, sometimes they're not wrapped into the copay. So often you get a separate bill for that. So that's where people miss that term, because they thought it meant when I walk in the doctor's office, this is all I pay. Not really all the time. I could pay $20 copay and then have a $200 bill come later for something else that was done. So if you get lab work, x-rays, MRI, CAT scan, something like that besides your copay, you'll feel happy. I paid $20 for an MRI, but then that bill is coming later. So you got to understand copay means for consultation. It does not always cover everything there. Sometimes it does. If the doctor wraps it into his consultation, then it might be part of the fee. But otherwise, expect to have a separate bill from there. So are we good so far on those two?
Yes, good. Deductible and copay. So what is that third term that everyone should know in determining their insurance?
So coinsurance. So coinsurance means how much the insurance company pays on your behalf for a certain charge. Now, depending on how you look at your benefits booklet, it might show what you owe, or it might show what the doctor, what the insurance company pays. The range is usually going to be anywhere from 70 to 90% is what the insurance company, or I'm sorry, 60 to 90% is what the insurance company covers. So if you see something where it shows 30% on your coinsurance, that means that's what you pay. The insurance company is usually, worst case scenario, seen as 50%, but generally it's 60 to 90%. So when you look on, right now we're coming up on Obamacare, healthcare.gov enrollment. You'll see metal, you'll see silver, gold, and platinum for different plans, or bronze, silver, and gold. So bronze is usually 60%, meaning that your insurance company covers 60%. Silver is usually 70%, gold is usually 80 or 90. So based on those gold levels, if I talk to someone that's, say, young and healthy, I might say, you know what, a bronze plan is fine for you. It's cheaper because it's a lower coinsurance and it's a high deductible. So it's meant for a person that doesn't get sick often. A good thing to think about with any kind of insurance really is you're either going to pay a lot now or a lot later, generally. I hate that that's the way it is, but that's just what I learned from a veteran agent I was talking to. And it's the truth overall when it's just the base policy. You can layer other things that could prevent that for supplemental policies or gap policies to cover just in case, but generally you're going to pay a lot now or a lot later. So when you're buying a policy, if you're sickly, if I talk to a young lady that's going through cancer or about to have a baby or something like that, I'll say, okay, you need higher coinsurance because I know you're going to have a bill. So case in point for us personally, when we weren't pregnant, we had high deductible health plans. We would just get a high deductible saying, hey, we're healthy, we're vegan, we never really see the doctor, but once a year. So we don't need to have a, you know, low deductible, high coinsurance. But when we were having a kid, we said, okay, doctor bill's coming. So I switched the plan and got a higher coinsurance and a lower deductible because I knew having a kid is easily 40 grand. At a hospital, like it's ridiculous to cost that much, but it's easily 40 grand. And the reason I know, one time we had a bill messed up where they didn't put the code right and they sent us the actual bill And it was like $44,000.
Wow.
So that's having a kid. So imagine something like COVID-19, cancer, mm-hmm. heart attack. Those things are way more expensive. Mm-hmm. So when those situations you know are going to happen, you're going to get a low deductible and a high co-insurance because you know you're going to use it. But you can change it every year. So every single year when I talk to folks about their benefits, I'll ask like, hey, is anything major going on? Is anybody pregnant? Any, you know, bad disorders going on? Anybody have cancer or something like that? Then we'll switch, which is why it's important not to just spend 15 minutes making your benefits decisions mm-hmm. because you might have forgotten like, oh yeah, Susan told me she was pregnant last week. I better change the plan right now. You know, there's things like that that come up, which is why every single year you should look at it like a new day. Never treat it like everything's the same. Always take a minute to kind of think, has anything changed in my life to make me change my plans? So that's where that one comes into play. And last but not least, mm-hmm. out-of-pocket max. Out-of-pocket max.
Okay.
That's a big one. Now, out-of-pocket max is actually really good. That's something that came out because of affordable healthcare. A lot of people give Obamacare and affordable healthcare a bad rep, but the biggest thing I like about it is this one piece is out-of-pocket max. Prior to affordable healthcare, a health insurance company could say you owe us $1 million. And they could just do that. That was, you could say, hey, you had cancer, you ran out the lifetime max, now you owe us $1 million. And that happened all the time. Out-of-pocket max means now there's a limit. There's a limit to how much you can be charged as an individual. So that number is either individual or family. Usually you'll see anywhere from $7,000 for an individual or $14,000 for a family. So if life happens, and let's say COVID-19 is a good example, studies show COVID-19 costs about $75,000 if somebody's hospitalized. Now, anybody that's hospitalized is like, I don't have $75,000. I spent a week in the hospital, which means I'll probably spend a month not working after that. So out-of-pocket max says, oh, no, you're not going to pay the $75,000. The limit that the health insurance has is $7,500 for you. So once you pay that, you're done. That's been a godsend for people because bankruptcy 62% of the time, or 60 mm-hmm. or 62, depending on the year, mm-hmm. come from medical issues. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing about that, if you really dig into the information, is over 70% of those people have health insurance. Mm-hmm. So 60% of the bankruptcies come from medical issues, but over 70% of the folks have health insurance. Now, the reason that happens is because they don't have money in the bank to pay some of these bills that come up. But at least now the number's tapering down because it used to be 75%. So at least it went down a bit because of out-of-pocket max. We're still not quite there, but that number is important to know because that's your doomsday number. If the worst possible thing happened, you know, hey, at least I know I'm not really going to get a bill for $100,000. I'm going to have this is the number and I can still get seen. It doesn't mean the health insurance or the hospital won't stop caring for you. Don't think that's the case. It means they're just saying that for you as an individual, that's the most you're going to have to pay. So again, for somebody that's going through disorders or sicknesses or something like that, that's important to them.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I knew that many of the bankruptcies, most of the bankruptcies had to do with healthcare and mm-hmm. paying for health costs. But I didn't know that 70% of those people who are going through those challenges actually had health insurance. That's amazing. The assumption would be that that bankruptcy was happening to people who didn't have health insurance.
Well, the reason for that too, and a lot of people think that, the reason is because there's other stuff besides, you know, paying the medical insurance costs. This basically you didn't work. I mean, think about it. I have a colleague that he was in the hospital for a month with COVID-19, a full month in the hospital. So if you're in there for a month, that's already 1 month of income gone. So a 12th of your income is gone if you, you know, make the same money every single month. And then also, if you're in for a month, you're probably going to have like another, I don't know, 2 months mm-hmm. or so recovering because mm-hmm. that's not walking, not doing anything normal. So your body is super depleted. So that's also the thing that your loss of income happens. So often when I talk to people, I have to paint the picture of like, hey, it's great you got health insurance, but has your health insurance ever paid your mortgage? Mm-hmm. Has your health insurance ever bought gas for your car, ever paid for groceries? And they're like, well, no, it's just for the doctor. Okay, well, we got to protect your income too. So a big mistake people make is they put all their eggs into the health insurance basket mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and don't realize like that's only for the doctor. You still got to think about everything else. And wealthy people, quote unquote, you'll always hear thrown around, have an emergency fund of 6 months to a year or 5 years, whatever. But most people don't have that. COVID showed us that. COVID showed clearly that we had to get PPP money and unemployment funds and all this stuff because most people don't save up at definitely for a month. So when you say, hey, you're not going to work for 6 months because you broke your leg and got an infection, people don't have money for that. So that's the big issue is they don't, one, understand their health insurance, but also what it doesn't cover. Your car insurance, people are great with that. they'll get gap plans and all these legal things that go on there, but that's still fixing the car. It doesn't cover your income. So you got to think about both sides of the coin, because your health is important, but so is your wealth.
Good points. Good points. And so we have these four terms that have been defined for us: deductible, copay, co-insurance, and out of pocket maximum. And mm-hmm. those are important terms for you to know, to make sure that you choose the best policy for you as an individual or your family. Do you have any other recommendations for people who are in the process of choosing their insurance?
Do not wait to the last possible second. It's
That was for me.
No, not even for you, but it happens all the time. You know, it's interesting. So we went through a big political season of talking about, you know, hourly wages and health insurance and all that. And I've always been the person that thinks that health insurance is a right, not a privilege. So as an insurance guy, I kind of don't like the health insurance market. It's really not my favorite thing because, one, we all should just have it. I mean, there's other countries that have it. I think we all should just have it. So it's not a moneymaker for me. It's really just helping folks. I don't profit off of writing Obamacare plans and all that. Just help people with it. And the reason that happened, because somebody waited to the last minute my first year working Obamacare. And it was the deadline was December 15th. So she called me December 15th, like at 5 p.m.
Was that me?
No, it was not you. No, but this is a bad story, though, because she called me the last possible second and said, hey, I need to get signed up for affordable health care. I said, OK, tell me your situation. Said, well, I'm stage 4 cancer right now, and the hospital said they will not treat me unless I get health insurance coming up for this coming year because I've depleted my other policy. I'm like, oh, all right, this is bad already. Stage 4 cancer is not ever good. And then she said, okay, you know, by the way, I need to make sure I'm in this network because this hospital is already treating me and I can't start over somewhere else. I said, all right, so we only got a few choices. I got to make sure I match up with your current hospital. Then the last whammy was also my husband was laid off. He's a mechanic. He hasn't found work for about 6 months. So we're really strapped for cash, but I know I'm not going to live if I don't get a cover, get this policy in place for January 1st. So I'm stressed a little bit. I'm like, wait a minute. You're telling me if I make a bad decision for you, you're going to die. Hmm. And you're also telling me if I go through my normal process, I get paid for you living. Hmm. And that bothered me. I'm like, I don't want to get paid for helping you live. You should just live. You're a human in the United States. You should just live. So from that point, I said, I don't want to profit off of like major medical and things like that, because it just made me feel bad about that. So now when I can deliver good news to people, then I'm okay working on that. But Obamacare is totally pro bono. I pass it to somebody else. I educate people on, hey, this is what you need. And then say, hey, somebody, I know that's all you do and you're a trustworthy person. I pass it to them to let them finish the process. But me personally, no income comes to my household from Obamacare policies, because I just don't think you're already in a bad situation 9 out of 10 times when you get a subsidy or something. So I'm like, I don't want to make money off of that. So that's why I say don't wait to the last minute. It's because you don't know what you don't know. And at that point, you're just buying whatever they tell you. So if you're like, hey, it's the deadline, I need to get something, you can just go on Google and look up health insurance and find somebody, and you might get the worst possible thing, because unfortunately, the internet's good at SEO, and whoever has the best SEO, they might be unethical. They might sell you something you think is health insurance. They might sell you policy that's not in your state. I had a friend that had a policy that covered Pennsylvania that lives in Georgia.
Oh my.
He's paying for a policy and he's like, I found out 2 months later, this policy is just for Pennsylvania, because he Googled health insurance and it's called the first person that showed up. So give yourself some time, because if it's not your love language, it's not insurance, then you need to take some time to understand what you're listening to.
Wow. And that's why it's so important to be educated about insurance, so that you can make sure that you make decisions that are best for you and that you make educated decisions. So
absolutely.
What advice would you give? Like you said, open enrollment is coming up in November 1st to December 15th for ACA, also called Obamacare. What advice would you give people who are getting ready to make those decisions about insurance, health insurance now?
Well, whether you have it through your employer, going through the marketplace, kind of look at everything available. Only look at health insurance. A lot of people will contact me and say, all I need is health and dental and vision. Now, those are the core elements of your body, obviously, so you care about those. But you got to also think about your health insurance, your dental and vision always pay somebody else. It does not pay anybody in your household. So you got to think about if you know, life happens and something bad were to occur, how would I deal with this deductible? Because I'm all for high deductible health plans. I think they're great if you have a situation where you're healthy, but you still got to think about, you know, what if. So when you get a benefits packet, look at everything in there. Don't just look at the first three pages and say, okay, I'm done. There's probably something else in there you need, like a disability policy or critical illness or hospital, something. And then when you're in the marketplace, they will show you different options, but a lot of them aren't great on the marketplace for other stuff besides health insurance. But so reach out to somebody. There's several insurance people out there. It doesn't have to be me. You can just Google health insurance in my area and I find an agent to ask questions. You can go on LinkedIn, you can go on Clubhouse even. There's different ways to find somebody, but just find out what else is out there. Because as a military brat, I didn't know about insurance until I was 21 because I was covered completely until the age 21. So when I was 22, like, what's the deductible? What's, you know, the same thing like you mentioned when you went to your first job getting insurance. I'm like, I don't know what this stuff means. And HR just says, you got to sign this by the end of the week. Mm-hmm. They don't give you information. They don't teach you what it is. They're like, hey, my job is to check the boxes. So this box is you get this done by Friday. So they don't take any time to explain to you. And there's nothing wrong with HR people. It's just not their language. Their language is not insurance. All the HR people I talk to say, will you please explain this? Because I don't know insurance. My job is to talk to people. So that's my biggest thing, is read the whole package or find out what's available. The wealthy, the reason they get to where they are is usually they accumulate wealth and then they protect it. They accumulate, then they protect. So anybody can do that, whether you're wealthy or not. So whether you make $20,000 a year or $200,000 a year, you should still protect your income by looking at what else could possibly happen. And that's what insurance is for. It's not a bad thing. It's just if you don't do it the right way, then it can be a bad thing.
So let's explore some of those other types of insurance beyond health insurance that people should consider when they're in open enrollment.
Yeah, big one is disability is a big one. Now, if you're fortunate, your company covers disability for you, but a lot of people I know don't have that. And usually that's something like Coca-Cola, Delta, you know, like a large company, your disability is probably covered. But if you work for a local daycare, a local restaurant, something like Small Business America, probably don't necessarily have that off the rip. So I would challenge people to ask your employer. Right now it's job seekers market. Job seekers have leverage. Employees have leverage because they're sick and tired of being treated unfairly. They're basically saying, hey, I'm not working for peanuts and I'm not working for no benefits. Mm-hmm. So they're asking employers like, hey, I know Chipotle pays $15 an hour and gets benefits. Why are you paying me 12 and nothing? Mm-hmm. 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 It's a valid question. I mean, if I know a security company I'm trying to work with, $10 an hour to get shot at. Because if you're a security guard, he literally said that some of the places we put security people, they get shot at. So nobody wants to work for $10 an hour and get shot at. Mm-hmm. So you got to up the ante a little bit. So as an employee, ask your employer, like, hey, what do we get besides the paycheck? Mm-hmm. Just ask them that, because anybody can give you a paycheck. That's the law of work. Anywhere you work will give you a paycheck or something financial. What else, though? So I would challenge people during this open enrollment period. If you're saying I'm going to Obamacare because my employer doesn't provide me benefits, ask them, why not? It doesn't hurt to ask. I mean, because at the end of the day, the employer might not know you need it. Mm-hmm. They might say, well, I thought you was okay with Obamacare. I didn't know you needed something extra. It's like, well, yeah, I want disability and I want life insurance or other things. And the employer can help reduce the rate. So as an employer, it helps you pull in people because you're giving them more stuff. And as an employee, it gets you a cheaper rate because it's a group rate. So if you don't have it through your job currently, ask your boss, why don't you offer it? At least it starts the conversation. Other thing too is just the, you know, when you're looking at the website, just understand there's other stuff that'll show you, like dental and vision. They're okay sometimes, but kind of look out there and see what's the network. If you're going to get policies to the marketplace for dental and vision, just make sure your dentist is in the network, because it's kind of narrow sometimes. So my advice would be look elsewhere just to make sure. But the biggest thing, disability, and then also life insurance, there's a lot of stuff people don't know about. There's a ton of cash value and living benefits and critical illness and things you can get just from life insurance. So sometimes a life policy can kind of cover a lot of the other what ifs, because if you structure it the right way, you can get cash from the policy. You mm-hmm. can use the death benefit while living if you get a chronic illness. Mm-hmm. If you get a disability, like an injury where you can't take care of yourself for a period of time, you can use the death benefit then as well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it can come from life insurance for your entrepreneurs or employees that are high net worth that don't have benefits. If you're like a contractor for a company and they give you no benefits, life insurance is a good way to kind of plug a lot of holes in the ship. So disability is one, but then life insurance is probably the other one that's an easy fix for a lot of issues people have.
That's great. Can you teach our audience when it comes to life insurance, what is cash value and living benefits for those who are unfamiliar?
Yeah, so they're separate terms. So cash value will be the policy has some element of interest, quote unquote, to it. Mm-hmm. So as you pay into the policy, there'll be a little bank that basically builds with a certain interest level. It could be anywhere from 0%, meaning there's no losses, which is great because if there's like a bad year, you wouldn't lose anything. But then it could be as high as, let's say, 10%. So that policy basically is the death benefit sitting there, but then there's cash accumulating. That cash, as you pay the policy, is you can use it however you want to. And a beautiful thing is tax-free. So anytime you pull money from a life insurance policy or any insurance for that matter, it's not taxed. So that's a great benefit for people. Living benefit means your death benefit can be used while living, which is why marketing-wise, life insurance has kind of been sold the wrong way. Because people buy it like death insurance, but it's really life insurance. Because if you think about it, they'll think about, what if I die? Let me get life insurance. Well, no, life insurance truly is supposed to be using it for your life. Mm-hmm. So you can use the cash value when you retire. You can use the living benefits when you have an issue with your health and things of that nature. So living benefits are use the death benefit while alive if you meet certain criteria of an illness. And then cash value, that's the thing that a lot of wealthy people take advantage of. Most of the regular people don't know about that, but the story of Disney would have never happened without cash value in a life policy. The story of McDonald's would not have happened without cash value in a life policy. JCPenney's would not have happened without cash value. All of these monster companies, basically banks didn't believe in them, or some issue they ran out of money, and say, you know what? I got cash value in my life policy. Let me run payroll from that for a little while. Or let me go pay for this addition to the company with that. That's how a lot of companies came to what they are now, because they had a secondary source of income from the life insurance. So it's great for average people and it's great for entrepreneurs.
Wow. I didn't know those stories that those companies actually were built off of cash value from life insurance.
Yeah. I mean, like Ray Kroc with McDonald's, after he bought the company from the McDonald's brothers, he didn't have money for payroll. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to pay people? Life insurance or mm-hmm. Disney. Imagine mm-hmm. a young Walt Disney walking into a bank saying, hey, I want to get money to start a theme park and a movie company. They're like, you're crazy. We're not going to give you money for that. So it was ridiculous at the time. They're like, nobody's going to give you money for that. So the banks were like, no. His parents got him a life policy when he's young and built up cash value. And he's like, I'm going to use my life insurance to start this company. So it was part of the funding. So those things like that are around. It's just, unfortunately, the wealthy kind of hide stuff a little bit. It's in plain sight, but not always there. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear somebody say, like, I borrowed from my life policy like nothing. They just say it candidly. Mm-hmm. But if you stop and ask about that, like, what did you mean you borrowed from your life policy? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I got cash value from my life policy when I was 12. Mm-hmm. I'm using it now for my business. That's something African-Americans and Latinos usually just don't know about. Mm-hmm. Because our version of life insurance is grandma died, the life policy paid for the funeral. Then the life insurance guy came around trying to sell his policies. That's mm-hmm. what the minority experience is. The wealthy experience is my son was born. My life insurance guy came by and covered him. So that way he's healthy all the time because he's always covered from his healthiest standpoint. And it's the cheapest rate he can ever get. So that's where we kind of get it wrong as minorities. We don't know that other people, that the majority population, buy life insurance very young. And when they're healthy, versus we buy it when we're unhealthy and about to die. So if we flip the funnel and do it the opposite way, we can get similar results to what they're getting.
That's amazing. When you talk about, I don't want to call it the tricks of the wealthy, but you know, some of the strategies they use to build wealth, that goes back to your original point that our communities must learn how to build wealth and protect wealth. And that is a strategy that we have not used is life insurance.
Yeah, we'll have a further conversation. I get mad about all the generational wealth talks going out there. Mm-hmm. But this piece is skipped all the time because my thought process, the easiest way to create generational wealth is life insurance, because one generation leaves, another one gets the money tax-free. Mm-hmm. You can go buy a multiplex all you want. You can go buy 10 houses all you want, but there's still taxes on that. Mm-hmm. There's a barrier to entry because you might not have money for a multiplex. And also it's the know-how. Mm-hmm. I don't have to have any know-how to buy a life policy just for term insurance. I just have to know, hey, can I afford it? Mm-hmm. And that is the easiest way to create generational wealth. So I wish more people that were soapboxing the generational wealth conversation mm-hmm. would make sure they mention, hey, even if you're not an insurance salesperson, just understand that's what it's made for. It's made for partly the death benefit passes tax-free. Nothing else you're pitching, if you get a multiplex, it's going to get taxed when that kid takes it. Mm-hmm, if you get mm-hmm. real estate, it's going to get taxed when that kid gets it. And they don't know what taxes are. So it's almost like a hard thing for them. Mm-hmm. It's cool and sexy right now where you're young and alive. But when you get older and you're like, wait, 30% of state taxes or something on this. Oh, wait, that's going to cut into it. So really, I want people to consider, if you're into generational wealth and you like that mindset, you need to think about life insurance as a very foundational piece.
Thank you so much for this information. It's very valuable on not only how to choose insurance, but what are the most important terms, these four terms we need to use to choose the best insurance for us, and that we also consider other types of insurance, such as disability insurance and life insurance. And life insurance is so important because it will help to build intergenerational wealth. So now we're in our college strategies portion of our interview. And Daryl, can you tell us what college or colleges did you attend? What were your majors? What was your major or majors? What were your degree or degrees that you earned? And what is that one piece of advice you would give students to make sure that they're successful in college?
Yeah, good question. So I was fortunate enough to have a full scholarship because my dad told me, if you don't get a scholarship, you're not going to college.
I've never heard a parent tell their
child. Hey, you better get a scholarship. You better get a scholarship because I'm not paying for college. Okay, Dad. Which is, he said later on, he's like, I would have paid for it. I just wanted to motivate you to do what you got to do.
Tell me after but the fact, right.
Yeah, after the fact. He's like, by the way. But I had a full scholarship to Fort Valley State University, HBCU, down here in Georgia. So I started out there and then finished in the University of Las Vegas, Nevada. So it's two schools to build it together. The degree's in accounting and mathematics. And then the strategy, though, for people that I wish I would have learned earlier, it's probably two parts. One is to network with other students, not just hang out, but kind of think the end goal is like, I'm going to leave school at some point. So I want to know people that have good things going on. Unfortunately, I know a few people from school that actually have good things going on. So I'd partly the networking at the very end. But other strategies, invest in yourself. Most of the stuff I retain and use now is not college stuff. So the college taught me how to take a test and how to have a process and things like that. But far as in business, the most stuff I learned was like reading books that are outside of school. So reading sales books, reading books on motivation, reading books on time management, things like that. That's had the best impact. So once you start college, don't stop learning. Learn outside of college. I wish I would have learned some of these things when I was younger, and it would have supercharged my results now. So definitely read outside of college and don't stop once the degree's over. It's unfortunate that most of us stop once we finish, you know, high school or college, whatever it is. But you can learn a ton more in all the different books and content. And it's so easy now. You can do Audible, a podcast like Ramona has right here. There's so many ways to learn. Keep on learning. So that's my biggest tip, is the network and to learn more than what school is teaching you.
Great advice. Number one, to network. Make sure that you build relationships with your peers, because the people you go to school with, they are going to be the people who are the who's who, who are running things after you graduate. So make sure you develop your network and know who your peers are and build and maintain those relationships. Secondly, invest in yourself. Make sure that you learn and read books outside of the classroom, because learning is so valuable to who you will become personally and professionally. And so just don't depend on the books that you get inside the classroom, but also invest time in developing yourself outside of the classroom. That was excellent advice, Daryl. And by the way, for those of you who are wondering who that African-American congressman is that I was mentioning earlier in the interview, who represents Fort Valley area, is Representative Congressman Sanford Bishop. Remembered his name. So thank you so much, Daryl, for being on our show. We can't wait to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I always love working with you.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry on Gully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.